Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm delighted to be able to escort you about a bit of what I think of as the battle space of the war for the free world with some of the best in that fight, one of whom is with us right now. He is Dr. Peter Pham. He is the head of the African Project at the Atlantic Council, and a man who is really regarded, I think, by many of us as one of the country's leading experts on Africa. Peter, you've just returned from, of all places, Taiwan, and you were over there to talk, as you have been now, I know, for some time with the Chinese, both on the mainland and on Taiwan, about the interests of those two countries in Africa. Give us a little bit of the flavor. I know there's a summit coming up next month with the mainlanders in Africa. How big a role are the Chinese now playing on the African continent, and what are the implications for us?
Well, my most recent trip was to Taipei, where I met with Free China, the Republic of China and Taiwan's officials, and they still maintain diplomatic relations with four African countries, but really they've been swept off the scene by the mainland Chinese, the communists. Chinese over the course of the last few years. I was in, actually last month, I was in on the mainland to discuss their Chinese policy towards Africa. And as you said, next month China is holding this triennial meeting of what they call the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. It's a big umbrella group that brings together virtually all of the African countries except for the four that remain diplomatic allies of Taiwan into a regional bloc doing business with China. And China certainly counts on Africa for the natural resources that are absolutely critical if it's to maintain the rate of growth that it's seen in the last two decades, and by maintaining that growth, to maintain stability. If you look at, for example, Sudan, that very conflicted country, or countries now that South Sudan has received its freedom, we're coming up on that first anniversary in a little over a week, 9% of China's oil imports come from there. And if you add in the oil from Angola, which is China's largest supplier on Africa, almost a quarter of China's energy imports come out of Africa, plus the vast array of minerals and the business opportunities for Chinese commerce. Huawei, one of China's telecoms companies, now operates in over 50 African countries. Mm.
And that's not good. As we know, Huawei is tied to the Chinese People's Liberation Army and almost certainly is putting its information networks and so on to the service of Chinese intelligence. This brings us to another topic I wanted to visit with you, Peter Pham, about, namely the ramping up, albeit I guess modest, but relatively speaking significant, ramp up of the U.S. AFRICOM, African Command, as they call it, the resources being made available to it for presumably principally training purposes on the continent. But is this seen in some small measure, at least, as a counterweight to what the Chinese are up to, or necessary at least for protecting our interests in the region?
Well, I think primarily what we're doing is playing catch up to building the structures that we should have had in place if we had a more strategic vision of the world years ago. We've come a long way. In the Clinton administration, there was a strategy document which declared that the U.S. had no strategic interest in Africa and left it at that. Certainly times have changed. We now recognize this importance of Africa, not just because ungoverned spaces, lack of democracy, lack of good governance are all conditions which enable extremist groups to take root and cause us problems, not only in Africa but elsewhere, but also the fact that we're now getting more of our petroleum imports from Africa than we do from the the Gulf region in the Middle East. And so it's an important part of our own energy security, especially since we're fairly reluctant to develop sources here at home. So it's quite important.
That's a modest understatement when you're talking about the Obama administration, that's for sure.
Yes. But, you know, the U.S.-Africa Com was created in by President Bush, but at the time when it was created, in 2006, 2007, the U.S. was fighting two wars, and the resources, the minimum resources which a combatant command ought to receive to have as a minimum base weren't allocated. AFRICOM didn't have, it had a headquarters staff, but didn't have any dedicated forces. So now that, for better or for worse, the war in Iraq has come to a conclusion where we're withdrawing from Afghanistan. There are personnel available, and the Defense Department's made the decision to at least give a few of those to dedicate them to training to be prepared for deployments to Africa. It's a modest number. It's a step in the right direction, but it's really just playing catch-up. AFRICOM should have had these resources from day one.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the flashpoints on the continent that you're following, Peter Pham. Specifically, there's a training mission, as you know, underway to try to help bring some modicum of order to what has been a complete basket case for, well, decades, namely Somalia. What role are the U.S. military personnel now training up the folks for this Somali operation doing, and what are the prospects for an outcome there that's consistent with our interests?
Well, for some time now, the U.S. has been providing training and overseeing training, a lot of it done by private contractors, of the largely Ugandan and Burundian, now there are a few Djiboutians, and Kenya has integrated itself into the command structures of the African Union mission in Somalia, AMISOM. And AMISOM, to its credit, has learned counterinsurgency strategy in the last 2 years, has managed to make considerable headway in pushing Al-Shabaab, the Al-Qaeda affiliate that has plagued Somalia for the better part of a decade. They've managed to push it out of the capital of Mogadishu and open a humanitarian corridor leading down to a town called Afgoy. However, the problem is not so much the military accomplishments of the African Union force, which ought to be saluted, but the fact that Somalia still, 21 years after the collapse of the last entity that could be reasonably called a government of Somalia, still lacks that government. And so as a result, the military can only do so much, but until there's a political solution that is accepted as legitimate, that isn't totally corrupt, the military can at best clear a space, but they can't really build up that stability. They recognize that mission, and the unfortunate leaders that the international community has engaged with in Somalia are at best a group of very efficient thieves. A report prepared by auditors, but international auditors found that the last 2 years, the transitional government of Somalia, so-called government recognized by the UN, stole 96% of bilateral financial aid.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Peter Pham, let me switch gears because we're almost out of time, and I do want to hit one other flashpoint. Nigeria is a country that I know you've been following closely for years. Boko Haram is, I guess, the Al-Qaeda affiliate operating in the north of the country there. What is the latest on its predations towards the Christians in the north and perhaps its threat to the south?
Well, it's best to foment a religious war. And it's getting some very limited but isolated success. The key is to keep that isolated and rare. For example, in Kaduna in the north last week, a series of suicide bombings hit Christian worshipers as they were coming out of their churches. Hundreds were killed. And as a result, some Christians who were understandably angry reacted in that anger and engaged in some riots and unfortunately, some innocent non-Christians were also killed. It was a very isolated incident, but Boko Haram is clearly trying to foment more of these and start a religious war. And that's a real danger. Now, the Nigerian president, who was away when all this was taking place, he had nothing better to do than to go to the Rio summit, came back and fired his national security advisor and fired his defense minister. So it remains to be seen whether the new fellows do any better than the two who've just been shown the door.
Yeah, that's too bad. I've been told that those are capable people, so it remains very much to be seen whether the situation will improve or not. We'll be looking forward to following it with you, Peter Pham. As always, I appreciate your time. Peter Pham, the director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council and an expert on these matters and much, much more. Thank you for what you do to keep all of us informed about a really strategically vital part of the world, Peter, and keep up the good work. We look forward to talking with you again very soon.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the medical system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney. And we are very pleased to welcome former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States, currently a law school professor at Berkeley Law. He is John Yoo, and he joins us right now. John, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
The first thing I wanted to ask you is we've all been reading your piece in National Review on executive overreach, and obviously that's top of mind for a lot of us in Washington right now as we watch this administration. And of course, you wrote this piece when you were essentially talking about the president's decision last week to not enforce our existing immigration laws and essentially extend amnesty to any illegal alien under 30. Now, since that time, we've had the Arizona decision, and most of that law has been struck down, although one particular provision has been upheld. How does what Obama did last week with what just happened with the court today and what his Justice Department is saying about the provision that was upheld continue your discussion and argument about executive overreach?
That's a great question. In the National Review piece, I argue that what President Obama has done is fundamentally contrary to the Constitution's vesting of the duty to execute the laws in the presidency, that the president has to carry out the laws that Congress sets out as long as they're not unconstitutional. He can't decide, I don't like this immigration law policy, say the policy of deportation and choose not to enforce it at all.
Now, before you go any further, I want you to draw the distinction between what this president is arguing and what President Bush argued when he supposedly refused to enforce laws that he felt violated the Constitution. And obviously, you're something of an authority on that. So could you explain the difference?
Sure. In the Bush administration years, and I worked on these issues, the administration said the president doesn't have to enforce laws, particularly in the national security and foreign policy area, where Congress is intruding on the executive branch's constitutional authority. So, for example, Congress would do things like order the president how to vote at the UN or which countries to recognize. There's a case about that the Supreme Court actually just this year. Or, and it's one of the cases that came up in my time, whether the executive branch could eavesdrop on terrorist communications or not. That's very different than what President Obama has done here, because here no one is claiming the immigration laws are unconstitutional. No one is claiming that's not Congress's authority, rather than the president's, to decide the rules on who comes into the country, who's allowed to stay, who becomes citizens. That's all granted to the Congress under the Constitution by constitutional texts, clearly, and Supreme Court decisions. And the Obama administration doesn't even pretend otherwise.
So is essentially this president behaving unconstitutionally by saying, I choose not to enforce this immigration law, and now in the light of the Arizona decision, I choose not to uphold the provision that the Supreme Court said was constitutional?
I think you're right. I think that President Obama is acting unconstitutionally here. Now, he's trying to hide behind something called prosecutorial discretion, which is the concept that the government doesn't have enough money and resources and time to try to prosecute everyone who violates a federal law somewhere, sometime. You have to set priorities, just the way the state of California, where I live, can't possibly have police chasing every speeder and putting them before every court for every time we go over 55 miles an hour. But that's different than saying, I just won't enforce this law at all. That's what President Obama has done.
All right. So what is Congress's response to that? If you have a president who consistently decides only to enforce those laws that he deems enforceable, that makes us a nation of men and not a nation of laws. Isn't that a violation of his constitutional oath?
Yes, it is. And there's a number of things Congress should do in response, ranging from it should refuse to confirm anybody in that department. It should hold aggressive oversight hearings. It should cut off funds for various Obama initiatives. For example, anyone connected with this office that's going to hand out these two-year work vouchers and delay deportation for people, Congress would just cut off funding for this office. It can do even broader things, but people shouldn't look to the Supreme Court, I think, for the ultimate answer, because the Supreme Court, I imagine, will probably not intervene in this. The court, I think in the immigration case out of Arizona, if Obama had won, if Obama were correct about his view, then the Supreme Court should have thrown out the entire Arizona statute. And instead, they threw out three parts of it, but they kept one important part. And then should the court's not really going to agree with Obama in the end? I don't think that he's able to cancel out a whole law by pretending he's just exercising his discretion as a prosecutor. But it's really Congress that's going to have to step forward, or the results of the November elections, and step forward to reverse this policy.
Yeah, as a former member of that body myself, my guess is it will be the latter rather than the former. They've already got Fast and Furious on their docket. And based on what happened with Bill Clinton, my guess is they will be a little bit circumspect in perhaps trying to challenge the president on this. I may be wrong. I like what you're talking about, saying, well, we can choose not to fund some of these provisions, not to staff them. But, of course, those kinds of appointments would reside in the Senate, and that still is, to some degree, a bastion of support for the president. So there are a few political hurdles here between now and the election if Congress wants to challenge the president on this issue.
There's another interesting thing that states could do, even after the Arizona statute. They could say that they refuse to recognize these work permits because, you know, Obama's policy here says, if you remember, that if you meet these criteria, you will not be deported even though you're in the country legally, and you will get a two-year work permit. Even after the Arizona case, I think that the states could still pass a law saying that they will not recognize these work permits because there's no basis for them in congressional statute. Because the point that the court was trying to make in the Arizona case was that what Arizona was doing here was in conflict with congressional statutes. But here, Congress hasn't authorized the President Obama to issue two-year work permits for anybody. There are no such things as these work permits for illegal aliens. So maybe states could actually try to trigger resistance to this in a way that would still be consistent with what the Supreme Court did on Tuesday.
But obviously, you've been watching this administration probably as closely as we have. If they did go ahead and say, all right, go ahead, write your two-year permit, your work permit. We won't acknowledge them. We won't honor them. Wouldn't Eric Holder sue Arizona all over again or any state that decided not to comply? Wouldn't we just be tying this up in another controversial legal hassle between the states and the federal government?
You're right. It's very interesting. I think you're right. If a state did that, Holder would probably do that. It would not be out of character with the other ways that he's abused his authority as Attorney General. But on the other hand, that might stop the program from working temporarily.
Well, okay, let's talk about another major hurdle between this administration and the Supreme Court, which may fall right into the lap of Congress, and that, of course, is the decision on Obamacare. Let me ask your opinion on this as a former attorney general and somebody who obviously handled constitutional cases when you were in that capacity. If the Supreme Court decides to throw out the individual mandate and thereby pretty much crippling all of Obamacare, is there, in your view, a way this president, who is so fond of asserting executive authority, is there a way he could supposedly find some provision to enforce Obamacare, even though the court has ruled against him? Do you see that as perhaps a bag of tricks that he hasn't used yet?
You know, I think there are some things he can do, but I don't think that he can resuscitate the main features of Obamacare. I mean, the main feature was that he and the Congress wanted to force every American to buy the kind of health insurance policy that they dictate. You know, so they could try to get closer to that by trying to make Medicaid and Medicare benefits similar to their ideal policies, which means that we're going to fight about contraceptives more for the members of religious institutions. But I don't think that they can get so far as forcing everyone in the country, all these businesses and individuals, to offer and buy the government's chosen health insurance policies. That I don't think they can do without the Supreme Court.
So in this case, he doesn't have the latitude of executive overreach, to use the title of your article, to enforce his will on the American people in contravention of the court or Congress.
No, and this is the important point, because what he's doing in the immigration case is he's refusing to enforce the law. And so what he's doing is he's refusing to put into effect the law, duly effected laws of Congress upheld by the courts. He's in the reverse position of the Obamacare, where the Obamacare, he needs to force people to do things. He can't get his way just by being passive. If he does nothing, then I think the forces of private society and freedom and liberty will prevail. He needs to coerce people to buy what he says is the only kind of insurance policies you can get. So he needs to get the other branches of government to cooperate with him to do that.
John, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much for your interpretation of this. We've been talking to former Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yoo. This is Secure Freedom Radio. We'll be back right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Syria's dictator Bashar Assad has declared that his country is now at war. Not exactly a news flash, but Assad's announcement suggests that the arming of the Syrian opposition by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and reportedly by our own government is now translating into a full-fledged civil war. That means we are now involved in providing weapons to rebels who are at best associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. At worst, they are tied to Al-Qaeda. If they succeed in overthrowing Assad's regime, it is likely that we will simply see it replaced by another one, whose repressiveness will be no less brutal, but will be justified by the Islamic doctrine of Sharia. Should that happen, we are simply compounding the danger of threats to our interests and perhaps to us. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio, and I'm very pleased to welcome back an old friend and a distinguished colleague, and yes, a New York Times best-selling author who has a brand new book. Of course, I'm talking about David Limbaugh, who wants you to know he is on Twitter now. At David Limbaugh is the hashtag. The book just out is The Great Destroyer, and it is a follow-on to a book called Crimes Against Liberty, which came out in 2011. David, thanks for being on the show. I've got to say, I'm starting this book, and this is as comprehensive an indictment of the Obama administration that I think I've seen or anybody will see.
Yes, Fred, thanks for having me on. I'm glad you're doing this interview. It's been a long time since I've seen you. I've always been an admirer and fan of yours. And yeah, I tried to make this as comprehensive as I could. And as you say, it picks up where Crimes Against Liberty left off, which chronicled the first year and a half of the administration and Obama's misdeeds. And this takes us from the summer of 2010 to the present. My goal was to make it as comprehensive and encyclopedic as I could, and I think I have.
Well, you sure have. And not only that, I think you've exercised rare foresight, because I found something when I was going through your book, and I want to just read you part of a paragraph because it ties into an issue that has just emerged this week, and I want to get your take on it. And this is what you say. This is from a section called, "We Don't Want to Drink Water from a White Water Fountain." And you say this: "With immigration, As with many other items on his agenda, Obama thumbs his nose at those who advocate the rule of law in our approach to the Nadi problem. He's expressed his support for illegal alien sanctuary cities and for suspending deportations of non-criminal illegal immigrants. His administration has also produced a memo detailing a strategy to circumvent Congress administratively in pursuit of amnesty for illegals. Now, you had to have written that before Obama made his decision essentially granting amnesty to everybody under 30 who was here illegally, and of course, before the Supreme Court decision on the Arizona law that came out yesterday and upheld just really one provision, but now the administration is saying, we're not even going to cooperate with that. Is this proof positive that your thesis, saying we are no longer a nation of laws under this administration and posed to get worse, is it coming true?
I really think it is, and a lot of people think that many of us conservatives engage in hyperbole. I don't think you can. These are unjustified the means of liberals. Obama's administration is a culmination of 50 years of liberalism infiltrating our major institutions, academia, and otherwise. And this guy is the quintessential liberal president who will do whatever he has to do to enact whatever he wants to enact. And I don't think he cares about the Constitution except as an expedient, and he doesn't respect the separation of powers and the checks and balances, which I think are pivotal to our freedom, pitting the branches against each other to jealously guard their own power so that liberty is a byproduct. He encroaches all the time. He told us that he was going to pass executive orders and administrative rules on a wide array of fronts. I think Rahm Emanuel said that when he couldn't get the executive, the Democratic elected Congress, to do what he wanted them to do. But even he recognized his limitations, or his supposed limitations, a few weeks ago when he said to a group of people, we can't do this on immigration. We can't do everything we want on immigration, and we'd like to. The democracy's messy. You got to go through the proper channels. And then he turned right around and did it. And you got to wonder, Fred, if it isn't because he's feeling a little desperate because he's going down in the polls. And he knows that he has to continue this identity politics and divide us and approach his groups of that he considers in his corner minorities, blacks, Latinos, people who are dependent on government because he's expanded the dependency plan. You know,
but
so, go ahead.
I was just going to say, going back to what you said earlier about this is essentially 50 years of indoctrination and inculcation by leftist organizations, whether we're looking at Islamist elements or we're looking at former Soviet agents or the student movement or whatever. This whole divide and conquer strategy, it seems to be working. I mean, he is still, I think, strong enough in the polls to believe that he's going to get reelected. You say in the chapter that I just talked about, the original attempt to kind of create executive immigration laws in contravention of Congress came out of a speech he gave to La Raza, who we know is advocating an open borders policy. Do you see an America willing to give this guy a second term? And if so, why?
Oh, and in fact, I think that if, as long as Mitt Romney draws in bold contrast, bold colors, the difference between his vision and Obama's actual record as opposed to the bromides, the vacuous bromides of hope and change he ran on in 2008. But if Romney grovels to the center and refuses to take the gloves off, refuses to learn the lesson of the congressional elections of 2010 and of Scott Walker recently standing up to these thugs, then I don't think, I think we diminish our chances for victory. But I think Romney's the odds-on favorite. What happened yesterday, though, following the Supreme Court decision, is very, very troubling.
And who gets the lion's share of popular support from that? Obviously, the president is trying to align with groups like La Raza and Hispanic groups, but you're obviously going to have a huge pushback from people in Arizona and people that live along the border. Is there a political winner from this Supreme Court decision, which I guess you would have to say, for the most part, found in favor of the administration's policy?
You do, and you have to shake your head about Justice Roberts. What was he thinking, especially in light of Justice Scalia's scathing dissent, or concurring and then dissenting in part? I think ultimately, if we articulate this correctly, that it will redound to Obama's detriment, because this is an attack on the sovereignty of the state of Arizona. I know Obama probably calculates, everything's a calculation with him, that he'd already lost Arizona. But and liberals elsewhere will applaud it because, again, they don't care about the Constitution. They care about results. And so they're going to be happy that we open the borders. They don't want voter ID laws. Obama's gone after states to try to attack their efforts to enforce voters proving who they are in order to vote. So it's a war between this federal government and the states. But what Obama, it's not just the Supreme Court decision. What he did defiantly after the decision by saying that he would not enforce the Arizona law that did exist, and he's encouraging people to go after the Arizona authorities in civil rights actions. I mean, this is inviting litigation, the federal government against the state government. This is outrageous. I think it just shows what a thug he is. By the way, I'm not trying to make this personal, but it amazes me when people say he's likable. I think that's the media narrative. And so
that's always mystified me, too. I say, what's to like about this guy? He treats us arrogantly, and he has no respect for our institutions or our values.
Yeah, and so now you know in your personal life, if somebody comes up to you and says, do you like so-and-so, and 95% of the people like him, you're probably even going to lie and say, yeah, I like him, because otherwise you're admitting you're a jerk because you're out of phase with 95% of the people. Well, when a pollster calls and says, do you like Obama, and you know that all you've ever heard is that the media says everybody loves him, you're going to say, well, yeah, I haven't really thought about it. But I did think about it, and I wrote a column about this. And there's not much to like about him because he's a bully and he's not nice. He's an adolescent and refusing to accept responsibility for what he does. He demonizes people in the most hateful and vicious way. He divides us, uses the race card all the time. I don't think people do like him, and I think, moreover, they can't stand what he's doing to their beloved country, to our beloved country. Even if they kind of like him, they will spank him at the polls for what he's doing to the country.
All right. Now, I want to ask you this, because the last time we laid eyes on one another, I was in your hometown of Cape Girardeau, and Cape Girardeau, being in southeastern Missouri, is now a Republican stronghold, but, of course, for years and years and years was conservative Democratic territory. What is the Democratic Party going to be like with Obama at the head? Are they all going to embrace this kind of virulent liberalism, or do you expect that party to fracture a little bit around the edges?
I'm very discouraged by the institution of the Democratic Party. The first place, they circled the wagons around a felonious perjurer in Bill Clinton and rationalized that. But now, I love Bill Clinton compared to Obama.
Mm.
But
me too.
Now, they've stood by him. They've refused the Senate to pass a budget for 1,100 days. They stand by him while we've got a 2 to 3 year window to turn our entitlements around, lest we go the way of Greece, according to Paul Ryan, who says this is the most preventable financial catastrophe in human history. And we have the entire Democratic apparatus standing in the way, pouring on the accelerants, pushing down the accelerator, guaranteeing that we're going to go into national bankruptcy. And stopping spending at a rate of $1 trillion deficits plus a year. I mean, his 10-year budgets give us $10 trillion plus deficits a year. They are committing national suicide over our efforts to stop them. I just am discouraged by the Democratic Party. I don't see many honorable ones among them anymore.
We're going to have to leave it there. David's new book is called The Great Destroyer. Go out and buy this book, and you will learn everything you need to know about Barack Obama.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight. 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we are each week, by our friend Jim Hansen, a former special operator in the United States Army, now the Director of Business Development at Absio Corporation. And Bill, 3, 2, 1. And Jim, we have over the years of our association on this program and in our communications about your contributions to Black5.net and our friends at BigPeace.com about political correctness. And I want to do a quick run through on your sensitivity levels to see how you're standing up to the requirements of the day. Let's start with the report that there are apparently some 100 people that the FBI has seen it necessary to investigate in the armed forces or their family members in connection with apparent associations with what the administration calls violent extremism. Does this surprise you? Does it worry you? Is it something that bespeaks potentially a much larger problem with respect to, well, to put a fine point on it, Sharia-adherent jihadists inside the wire of the United States military?
Yeah, you know, I guess from a general perspective, I assume that the military is a little bit better than a cross-section. So if I find a certain number of bad actors in any cohort, So I think the idea that there's investigations going on related to military members is not by itself a bad thing. The problem is I don't trust this administration to be doing it in a fair and equitable way. And as you mentioned, political correctness, I would assume that their goals in this are similar to what they've done with having the IRS, you know, asking questions to Tea Party organizations about their donors, you know, and anything they've done that aims at their political enemies as opposed to does a fair job of, you know, exercising the executive powers that the agencies, you know, under Obama's control have. So, yes, it does worry me. It shouldn't. You know, in a real, you know, place where I trusted the executive branch, but I don't. You know, I don't believe that they will do it fairly. So I think, to your point, they're probably not investigating the people they should, being, you know, the Nidal Hassans of the world who are getting a pass because they don't want to aggravate Muslims, and probably looking at anybody who joins a gun group or, you know, any type of states' right organization as a, you know, according to Southern Poverty Law Conference, a grotesque organization, those are dangerous people. And, you know, as DHS put out some stuff a year or so back saying that some of those groups are the actual dangerous terrorists. It's just, it's not borne out by the reality of the situation, and I don't trust them.
Well, it's a very interesting point, and one that I think we do need to know more about. Which violent extremists are they actually tracking down? The implication of the stories was that when these reports first surfaced, I think at National Public Radio, was that these were in fact Islamists or people associating with them. But you're right to raise that alarm, because that's the way the administration has certainly approached this violent extremist threat heretofore, which is it's actually the Tea Parties that are the biggest problem. Jim, moving right along, we have Gay Pride Day at the Pentagon, a celebration of the legislation that, as I recall, you supported to bring homosexuals out of the closet and into the military, or into the military, or already in the military and out of the closet. What's your take on the celebration of this at the Pentagon this week?
You know, I am a libertarian by nature. I don't think it's any kind of a governing policy, because, you know, I'd only be comfortable with it if I got to make the rules, and that's not the way it works. So I believe everybody should be free to do what they want to do. But then I think they ought to shut up about it and quit rubbing our noses in it. You know, that was my whole point with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, is don't tell. You know, stop telling. I don't care if you're gay. I don't care who you're sleeping with. Male, female, it doesn't matter to me. And so the whole idea of having Gay Pride and, you know, turning this into a festival more worthy of Key West Fantasy Fest, you know, than the dignity of the United States military, I'm against that. You know, and unfortunately, many people warned that that's exactly what would happen. I just was willing to accept it as a side effect. Yeah, definitely among them, and you were right. You know, and I knew to some extent that was going to happen, but I was willing, you know, in the idea that people should be free to do anything that's not harming other people, but then shut up about it. Do it. You know, if you want to say what happens in the privacy of your bedroom should not be the government's business, then don't make it my business, our business, or the military's business.
Yeah, and
shut
that's
up.
And that's really what I think is more concerning than just this, you know, Gay Pride Fest at the Pentagon, is that the agenda, the sort of radical homosexual agenda, is now being promoted to the point where the next step seems to be to have spousal benefits and gay marriages possible for military personnel. And I just have the feeling that this is an assault not just on the culture of the military, Jim Hansen, as we've talked about over the years, but also, you know, an effort to get their way with the larger society as well. Let me ask you one other question, Jim. We've got Ranger training for women now apparently being blessed by the United States Army. As a guy who's gone through that training yourself.
Hold on. Now, I'm not a Ranger. I'm Special Forces, so I haven't been to the Ranger school. I skipped that because it was too hard.
All right. As you were, let's just say that you've been through some pretty rigorous training in your time. What's your attitude towards having I think typically the standards dumbed down to have what they call gender norming to enable women who might not otherwise be able to cut it in these very rigorous training programs or you know, qualification programs to make the cut?
You know, if they do that, I'm 100% against it. They claim that they're not going to do that. I don't trust them. You know, I think that in the end, They will end up in some way, shape, or form wanting to have more female graduates than they can get with the standards as they currently exist. The area where I would go ahead and say I'm okay with it is the fact that Ranger School long stopped being simply a training place for our light infantry patrol, light combat patrolling unit leaders, and became a block check for promotion and a school. You get the tab so that you have it on your uniform and you have it in your records and you get promoted. And if you don't have it, it is a detriment. I mean, there's no two ways about that. It is a detriment and it's an advantage to those who have it. So I think if you wanted
Jim,
to make a case,
I've been told that both the current Army Chief of Staff, Ray Oradiano, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, neither of them have these tabs. So it's obviously possible to be promoted through the system without it. But again, the question really is, should we be lowering the standard? And should we be making it possible for people who don't, cut it to qualify simply because they want to be promoted in the ranks?
No, but should we be making first of all, absolutely not. But should we be making it so females who could make it through don't get that opportunity and don't get the advantages of having that training and having that tab? We got women leading vehicle convoy patrols, have in Iraq, have in Afghanistan, and will continue. So I think, I don't believe it's simply a combat leader's course anymore. And if they want to make it that again, then they need to take it back inside the Ranger Regiment and make it only people who are going to be assigned to the Ranger Regiment get that training, and then they can have the standard as tough as they want.
Fair point. Jim Hansen, quickly, we've been talking about what it's going to do to the military if these cuts in the defense budget, another $500 billion over the next 10 years under what's called sequestration, go forward. You have been warning about it. I think certainly understand what it means for the military. We've also been hearing increasingly, in fact, we've done some work on it at the Center for Security Policy, as you probably know, on the economic impact as well. Maybe as many as 1 million jobs will be lost. What's been interesting, Jim, is just in the past couple of days, it's seemed to dawn on some of the members of Congress and senators who are responsible for maybe fixing this problem that the pink slips will start going out before the election. Do you think that'll concentrate their minds?
I think if the pink slips go out before the election, it may end up with some pink slips going out to senators and congressmen on election day, rightfully so. So I think it will focus their minds, and I don't know if they can fix it before then. I don't know what they're going to do. Are we going to actually have a vote? Is Harry Reid going to allow a vote on that? No. Boehner can get something passed through the House. Hell, I'm standing 10 feet from Congress right now, Frank, and he can get that done today. Harry Reid will shut it down in a heartbeat because they don't want their people on record making those votes.
Well, this is the interesting thing, Jim. We'll watch this closely and with your good help, but I think Harry Reid is now facing the distinct prospect that, as you say, some others are going to get pink slips, including out of his caucus, and it'll put the fat in the fire for the president who's threatened to veto any kind of relief. We will be on top of it with your help, as I say. Thanks, Jim Hansen. As always, keep up the good work. We'll talk with you again very soon. We'll talk to the rest of you tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.